Hello, everyone. This is Andy Clodfelter.
This is Lisa Monahan.
And you, of course, are listening to the marvelous, the magnificent, demonstrative, that's not the word, 90s court.
90s court. Taking 90s you back to the roar 90s. Court. That's
back
what they call it.
Back to the roar 90s, see?
Yep.
So we back wanted to start off real quick before we get started. There's some stuff going on in the world right now. We get it.
I don't know what you mean.
That maybe some people just don't know about, like, because they just are under rocks. So we want to just quickly acknowledge ahead of time that we are aware that it's a thing. And we are hoping to be maybe a bit of a respite for you in trying times, because frankly, you're probably going to need a lot of streaming and free media to get you through the next few weeks or however long you'll be trapped in your house. So, but it's the 90s, so that's not happening. So,
damn straight.
Welcome back to a simpler time.
We can be an escape for you. We can be the vacation that you missed.
I can be your hero, baby.
Did you know that you were vacationing in the 90s this week? You didn't? Guess what, loser? You're vacationing in the 90s.
Tickets are free. Yeah. Tickets are free. They're going out of business. They're just giving them away.
No customs. No customs. Yeah. Anyway, how are you, Andy?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, all things considered, you know, I actually had a couple vacation days planned this weekend for an event that got canceled. So I mean, I'm taking full advantage of it, enjoying some time off. I got tomorrow off as well. And I'll be working at home for a little while. So that's pretty fun. Cause you know, I saved myself a 2-hour commute, you know, it's 1 hour each way at home.
Oof.
So I work. So I'm pretty pumped for that. How about you?
I got back Saturday afternoon from a 13-hour drive.
Yes.
I was on a huge storm chase in Pecos,
yes,
Texas on Friday. It was the best.
I am so glad to hear there was something, like, I was, because you said, like, this would be a perfect time for a storm chase. I'm like, what are the odds there's going to be a storm? And then there just was.
Well, but this one, I mean, I live outside of Austin. That was it was 6 hours to my destination. And then I chased it an additional, what's the math? 6 hours there. Take away about an hour and a half of not driving, but there I was on the road in my car for 13 hours on Friday chasing a storm. And even though my dash cam got the footage of the tornado, but the barricade hit my car when the tornado was in front of me and I missed it.
Ew.
Damn it. But I have video footage of it, so that's
hey,
half
righteous.
The battle, right? Yeah.
Did you
so
not,
anyway.
Have you still not seen the tornado yet?
Not in person. Not in person. I'm getting so, but you know what? It's just mid March. It's there's still plenty of time this year. So and plenty
continued.
Of time. Guess what? You can do alone for social distancing. Get in the car and
fucking
chase a tornado.
Ain't nobody gonna hop in the car with you for that ride. So you're good.
Damn straight. That's true. Even if I wanted to, the only person would be my mom, and she works like 700 hours a week. So
yeah.
Oh, anyway,
so it's fun though. I'm glad you were able to get a chase. I actually did. I enjoy all your photos and everything.
Oh,
and then
thank
you said I things got a little sketch, so I had to call it, and I wanted to say, I'm like, aren't you supposed to keep going when things get sketch? But then I knew, like, some actual storm chase would be like, well, actually, you still prioritize, like, somebody would hop in and, like, in the comments section below me and be like, you don't know anything about storm chasing. Like, I know, I'm just giving my co-host grief.
I know.
Facebook,
yeah,
so.
I only called it because it was completely pitch black.
Anyways, I'm glad you had fun.
Me too. Yeah. So, anyway, shall we get to it? Get down to business.
Yeah, so we've got some things that we like to discuss, and I'm actually going to be up first, I guess. So
hell yeah.
Here I come with a thing that was well-prepared, thought out, and thoroughly planned for. So I would like to talk to you all about a video game. It is actually not the first in the series of the video game. There was another one that had come out previously for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System, and I believe also the Game Boy had released one, too. Part of the reason for this was because weirdly, and I think it's still true, unless it's changed since then. I mean, it'd be in the 2000s, so I'm not going to talk about that.
Okay.
Nintendo decided that, like, owning a baseball team would be cool. So, and I'm sure you know a little bit about this because you might have lived in the town where this might have happened. So Nintendo at some point thought, like, we should get a baseball team, and so they owned the Seattle Mariners.
Nintendo owned the Mariners?
For a considerable amount of time, yes.
What?
And,
okay.
And as a result of that, they thought, like, who better to be our spokesperson than Ken Griffey Jr. for the sport of baseball. Which, here's the thing. He was a great player. But it like, looking back, it seems, I guess maybe he's not as big of a baseball fan. It seems weird and wild to me that Ken Griffey Jr. was like the face of what I would say is one of the most successful baseball video game franchises, like, in history. Like, better than any other ones that are, like, named after a player. You know okay. what I mean? So, yeah. What came out, and this is the reason I mentioned this one, is because this is the game I played the most. And when I was, and I realized this is the one I played the most because I literally, before we started the show, said I need to get this soundbite pulled up. And I realized, oh, wait, the soundbite is for the newer game on N64, which came out on May 31st in 1998. So I'm going to play you quickly the intro that sticks in my head forever and eternity.
Okay.
Hi, this is Ken Griffey Jr. Let's play Major League Baseball. It's showtime. Call me, call me, call me, Junior.
It's showtime.
Call me, Junior. Call me, call me, Junior. Call me, call me, Junior.
Okay, that's enough of that. So it just, in case you guys didn't catch all of that, it's, hi, I'm Ken Griffey Jr. Let's play Major League Baseball. It's showtime. Call me, Junior. Call me, Junior.
And just call me Junior for, it never stops. It never stops.
But you have to understand, like that is stuck in my head still to this day because we played that game so freaking much when I was, because like I said, it came out in 98. So like I was a teenager at this point when this came out. But here's the thing. It's a really good game. Like it was one of the first games that I would say like, after like, you know, Super Nintendo and stuff, you know, they can only do so much, but like batting mechanics, pitching mechanics, like had so many choices available to you. Like, so you would always be either the batter or the pitcher, you know, who, okay. whatever you're playing. And they would have, various different, like, this dotted yellow circle that would be as the hitter, that would be your strike zone basically, or like where you're hitting. So okay. if, and then when you're the pitcher, you're throwing a ball, like you, it'll give you your pitcher's selected choices of balls you can throw, like, you know, slider, fastball, you know, curveball, things like that.
Okay.
And so you'll do that. You'll be like, you'll throw it at the base and then you can like move your joystick a little bit to make it either go down or to the right or up or whatever. And then it'll show like at the last second where you threw the ball but by that point, the person will have needed a swing already. And of course, if you throw it right inside their yellow circle, they hit it, you know, et cetera. So it was a super cool mechanics. Like it made the game super easy and fun to play. They did make Ken Griffey Jr. basically a god in the game. So
yeah,
like,
sounds like so it.
It's kind of like, I mean, even though Michael Jordan was not in NBA Jam, you still knew that the Chicago Bulls were the best team, like with Scottie Pippen and what's his nuts. I feel terrible. I don't remember the other player that was on there, but like it was just one of those things where it was kind of funny because you usually played almost always as the Seattle Mariners or whomever. And you know, because you play in those games, unfortunately, that are very dated because it's like, hey, this is the year it came out. So it's based on the players, the teams, et cetera, from that time period. So me as being initially, you know, I would say largely a Cubs fan. I always tell people I'm not a huge baseball fan in general, but I've, you know, historically been a Cubs fan when I have watched with any regularity. The Cubs were obviously really bad, so like, so usually kind of mix it up and try some other teams, but yeah, so there was like, you'd be like A, B, you know, C pad, different things like that to throw different kinds of pitches. There'd be the Z button, et cetera, different ways you can throw pitches and stuff. Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty straightforward game. And I think like the big difference between this game and, the prior, like, Super Nintendo version, everyone looked basically like hulking behemoth humans, like fake people, you know, like,
yes.
You see some guy who looks like, that guy is, looks like a professional wrestler and he's in playing baseball. They made him very realistic. They made the batting positions, the way that people hold their bat, things like that, basically true to form, like of the actual players. So this is kind of one of the first video games, I think at least, where they really made it a point to try and make it more true to life. And yet made the game still enjoyable and fun and not too overly complicated, because people play a lot of sports games these days. I haven't played a sports game in a long time, like, you know, like in, on the new systems. Just too complicated. They put too many features and stuff in them, but this one was just kind of the perfect mix of realisticness combined with fun, easy to play mechanics. So anyways, I just wanted to bring that, mainly because I decided on it roughly 2 minutes before we started recording. So,
well, I looked it up and I was like, I think the SNES version I played. Like, I looked up pictures of it just now. I was like, I'm pretty sure I played that one. I never owned it, certainly, but like, if I'd go to a cousin's house or something, it was there. And I was like, well, shit, it's a video game. Who cares? Sure.
It's a video game. So, oh, man.
Is it not doing anything that other kids are doing? Is it just like staring at a TV and playing a video game? Fuck yeah, I'm into it. But yeah, this is definitely ringing a bell. But yeah, this seems like ages ago. Like, when was the last? I haven't heard anyone talk about Ken Griffey Jr. in like 16 years.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that question.
Let's see. Just an FYI, Nintendo did own the Mariners. They bought the team in 1982, and they sold the game 17 years later. So that's a thing. So just an FYI, they still have a pretty good stake in it, but they basically sold the majority rights of the game at that point. So that's my thing. Jeez. Enjoy.
There's your thing. Well, thank you for the thing.
You're welcome.
Much appreciated. Oh, I just changed the font size and now I can't read half my stuff. Okay, here we go.
Is it big or small?
It's too small. Like I told you, my kids woke me up at 5 a.m. and it is 8:30 p.m. and I'm like, I can't see.
Struggle.
Yeah, struggle bus. I am the captain of the struggle bus. The captain. Buses have captains, by the way. Okay, so my thing, very important, probably.
Buses captain? Have captains. Sorry, I couldn't let that one go. That's so good.
Of course not. Buses have captains. Get on board. All aboard the bus.
All aboard.
To Trainwreckville. Okay.
Trainwreckville. Wow, we've... A captain of a bus, welcome to Trainwreckville. Like, so many all different aboard. Modes of transportation's mixed in there.
Ahoy, ahoy, mate. Let's do this. All right. My thing, Andy, is something you may or may not be privy to, and that's totally cool if you're not, but I hope any female listening to this is like, oh my gosh, yes. Okay. In the 90s, there was a clothing/accessories brand that was founded, and they launched in 1993, and that was called Delia's. Are you familiar with Delia's? Did you ever come upon a catalog of that at anyone's house? Delia's?
Oh, D-E-L-I-A?
Uh-huh.
I don't believe so, no.
Okay, it's totally cool if you didn't. Delia's was just like, if you were, I think, so it launched in 93. I was like, what's the math? Eight at the time.
Mm-hmm.
This was more of a thing that I was aware of when I was in middle school, so maybe a few years later. By the way, Delia's is not capital D, Elia, apostrophe S. It's lowercase d, capital E, capital L, lowercase
what
I, capital
fuck?
A,
star,
asterisk, S, lowercase
Why?
S. Why now, in one thing that they did in their catalog, all over the front of the catalogs, all over the interior, where they just had things written out, it was... every other letter, capital, not capitalized. And I was like, this is a fucking nightmare. But I think at that point in time, it wasn't like, I'm making fun of you text. It was just like, I'm edgy and the internet is a new baby and I'm caring for it. But they had the dopest fucking catalogs, Andy, because like, I was not cute in the 90s. No. Maybe at the beginning when I was still just like a little kid.
I'm a baby.
I'm just a baby. Spice.
I don't know. Why are we going to this fight when babies are involved?
Because I have the worst British accent in the
they're
world.
They're always British when they're babies, though.
It's true. Andy, it was so bad. I was not cute. And I wanted to be, but I didn't know how to be because it's that awkward phase of life. And during that awkward phase of life, I was introduced to Delia's. Mm-hmm. And that catalog would come every few weeks, maybe every month. And it was just full of... maybe it was every season, I'm not sure, but like it would just have the cutest, I mean they're models so they're cute, you know, they're
looking at right now, there's so many fucking tweens in these goddamn photos,
little tweens, and like they're the cutest shit in the, and they're like the cutest 90s chicks ever. And like I was a 7th or 8th grader, like I said, and I was probably wearing like a women's size 14 or something at the time. I was not the body type for the Delia's catalog, but did that stop me from trying?
Fuck no.
Nay, it did not. Their target market was females from the ages of 10 to 24. So that's a pretty big gap.
24?
Yeah, like they were like, we want the young'uns. And you can tell they did because they were having like just the cutest young kids fashion, or not like teenage fashion. Apparently it was really popular with college students because it was rather affordable. And they also had like, they had the cutest clothing. Like they even had like, I don't know if you remember the trend in the 90s where girls would wear like bandana, head bandanas.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that? Like a headscarf or something, like, or like a midriff shirt that would show, you know, that was like way too small for your Pizza Hut loving ass, or my Pizza Hut loving ass, or like a long maxi skirt. Like I remember buying a long navy blue maxi skirt with like white tribal print on it, and it was cute, but not on me. And they had a bunch of chunky shoes, which are huge in the 90s, but they also had like room decor and furnishings, which were mostly what I went after because I was too fat. And I was like, well, I can't fit into those pairs of pants, but I can probably fit into this twin size comforter.
It's like a fucking dream. Just cut some armholes in there and we'll make this work.
If I just stay in bed, no one will know that I'm ugly and don't fit in with your clothing. So it was the saddest, but also the coolest. But like they did have some, go ahead.
So you would get like designer shit, but in a place where no one would see it but you.
But if you were cute, I'm sure there were like, again, I was probably 11 to 14.
You don't have to keep speculating on if I was cute. Just so you know, I was decidedly not cute.
You were not decidedly cute. But I'm saying,
I was
like,
not at all.
But like, I was 11 to 14 probably when I was trying Delia's as a thing for me. Mm-hmm. It was not working out for me. For the people who were older than me and actually somewhat trendy or fashionable, it was probably primo shit for them. It was not for me. It was a hot mess on me. But like, I still loved it because I thought like I would get the catalog and be like, this is what I aspire to be. I want to be this, and I wasn't ever, but that's okay. But like they did have retail locations, and I eventually found one in the Dallas area at some point, and I was so fucking excited to go in there, and guess what, I still didn't fit into anything but maybe like a pair of socks and a wristwatch, which I probably bought.
You have to understand, Lisa, I've never related to you more as a human being than during this conversation, because this was my experience in every fucking store ever. So I get it.
Yeah, I think this was probably a store where they'd be like, our sizes are small, medium, and large. You're like, okay.
This should be This should be fine.
Yeah, I think the large will fit me. I'm 9 and a women's size 14. This is probably fine. My body type is definitely the right fit for you. It was not. Narrator, it wasn't. In 1998, to kind of show how with it they were and like how much they understood the new wave of the internet, they launched a page called Girl, lowercase g, capital URL, so girl.com, which was like a page for Delia's customers to like go and be social or maybe have some feelings or like learn some shit, I guess. I don't really remember.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah, go for it.
I just quickly Googled I just searched girl.com, G-U-R-L. Mm-hmm. And a redirect to 17.com.
Yes, they got bought out by 17.
The headline is 45 best romantic movies to watch this weekend.
Perfect. I need to know. I'm going to be having a lot of weekends.
Dear John, Moonlight, Beauty and the Beast, The Notebook, Crazy Rich Asians, and Titanic are amongst those. So just an FYI in case you still have something to do with this weekend.
Great.
Go ahead. Continue.
Not great. I don't like that. No. It's fine. I'm glad to hear that they're still trying to connect with this. Yeah. Whatever the hell audience this is. But like they were bought for background. They were bought by Alloy Inc. If you knew Delia's, you knew Alloy Inc. They were bought by them in 2003 and then some bankruptcies happened and now they're just available through a company called Dolls Kill. But if you just flip through, there's a Tumblr. DeliasCatalogs.tumblr.com, and that's where I found pictures of a lot of the catalogs, and I went through them and I was just like, I just remember being like, I want to be cute in like your twill cargo pants that sat at the hips, but my hips were too big already. Or like I wanted the weird wind pants with stripes down the side and sandals for some reason, because that was a fashion trend. And like super colorful tennis shoes and like so much Paul Frank shit. Do you remember how hot Paul Frank was in the 90s?
You're
so hot.
You have to understand, like, as a child, I never made any fashion decisions for myself.
Paul Frank was the monkey face. The monkey face brand. Do you remember like the
Paul Frank?
They were married.
Okay, so apparently, yes, I see the monkey face. So I recognize that.
Yeah, that's all. It's just like that monkey face was everywhere in the late 90s, and you could get some of the Paul Frank stuff in their catalog too. And
did
like
they make
I said,
really
you could...
skinny shirts for really skinny people.
Yes, they did.
That I and... remember this for very skinny fucks that probably like changed their hair color and shit.
Yes, I had a friend who was a female friend of mine who was very busty and on the smaller side and had a nice Paul Frank shirt. And I was like, I hate you. Even though we're friends, I hate you very much. So, but she looked good in it. I'm glad one of us could actually buy something from Delia's. But they also, like I said, they had bedding. And I remember buying like cat bedding from them at some point. But if you are able to go to that Tumblr, I wrote down, I didn't remember that along the tops of the pages of the catalog, they had the stupidest shit written up there. So like some of the things were, I wish the world were my oyster. I wish oysters weren't slimy.
What?
I wish I had a tiger. I wish tigers were vegetarians. I wish I could do what I wanted. I wish I knew what I wanted. I wish I knew the answer. I wish I knew the question. So like, hey, existential crisis, how's your existential crisis? Are you okay?
We got an existential crisis for your existential crisis.
We got a 911 here on this existential.
Got some inception level existential crises for you.
Did you want some like clogs to go with your? Nope. Just a crisis. Okay. Well, how about like a nice lantern for your bedroom? No, we're just gonna fill you with like weird insecurities and like all. Why is everything a wish? Why can't you just be? Like, I wish I were this. I wish I were that. Bitch, just be it. In 2020, we're like, just be it. And the 90s, we're like, what if?
Can I ask you a question? This is random.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a lot of Paul Frank skull candy, which apparently, like, there's so many different
weird
skull candy headsets with fucking that stupid-ass monkey on it. That's completely unrelated. I'm sorry. I was looking up. I go down rabbit holes while you're talking sometimes, and this
sure.
is the one
no,
I
no,
found.
No, it's fine. But like, how is skull candy still a thing? Isn't everything just AirPods now? Like, does anyone?
Apparently, people are like, there's still a hot market for wired headphones.
Wow.
That neat. You get for free when you buy a phone, but I'm gonna pay money for these. No offense, if you own Skull Candy, I'm sure they're great. Like
I'm sure they're great.
And
maybe
apparently
you would
they're really expensive. They're like $200
for Skull Candy. I used to be able to get those at like the quick checkout by like a Walmart.
It could be that these are old Skull Candies from like a while back, and they're like, if you want to buy like retro or something, I don't know.
Awful.
Anyways.
Awful. Anyway, that's Delia's.
Anyways, Delia's.
Bye. Anyways, that's Delia's. I would love to hear if any of the women listening to this had the same feelings about Delia's. Maybe you were skinnier and I hate you in the past, but
that
I love you
asterisk
still.
Thing though, it's like it's out of control when you look at the actual label for Delia's.
Yeah,
D-E-L-
it's a big ass star,
lowercase I, uppercase A, fucking explosion, like nuclear blast radius, like that looks like a warning logo for like hazardous chemicals, like yep. next to the yep. lowercase S. So anyways,
it's so much.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing Delia's to my attention. Now I know that that's a thing. And
yep,
my life
now
is
you
better.
Know. The more you know, shooting star.
Do, 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 do.
So, all right, what well, say ye? We I take a quick break?
I say ye, we take that quick break.
And then we'll be right back with poll results and whatever else happens after that.
Yar.
So, all right. Yar, matey. Get on me ship of the bus. We're going down the tracks.
We be taking a break now. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Andy Clodfilter. Let's play 90s court case. It's showtime.
Bobo. What did he say? Oh, that's right.
Call me Andy.
Gross. I hate that. I hate it so much already.
It's so bad. That's why we always like think of it, because it's just like, what, like, this is a rap song.
Call me Andy.
Call me Andy.
At least it's not as bad as the, like, any of the raps from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle tour that we covered last week. Oh my gosh.
I'm glad that there was no new things, new rabbit holes for you to go down Ninja Turtles wise.
Oh, I'm sure there will be. Do not challenge me. You'll figure it out.
I will find
some new shit to go into.
Hey, gang. So we had a show last week. And I'll tell you what, like, I don't know if last episode was, like, one of the funnier episodes we've ever done or anything like that. Like, but, like, I really enjoyed researching that court case. Like, that was one, like, so I hope you guys enjoyed that, too, because I genuinely enjoyed, like, watching the walkthroughs and everything like that. And I thank Lisa for letting me do a video game because sometimes,
oh my gosh, yeah,
because sometimes we're like in total agreement, like, yeah, let's do this. And sometimes I'm like, Lisa is like, hey, let's do NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. Neither of us like that, but like,
right.
But yeah, like for the Nintendo thing, for the video game thing, I was like, can we please do a video game? Here's some video games. So,
oh yeah, I was down.
Yeah. So, down. So last week, as you may remember, we covered Resident Evil 1 versus Tomb Raider 1. It was a close one. I'll tell you what, you know, especially on Facebook, damn. So, we'll start with Twitter. So Twitter decided 60% to 40% in favor of Resident Evil. Facebook though, damn, was it close. It was back and forth a little bit. Facebook ended up coming out Resident Evil as well, but only to a degree of 52% to 48%.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was that close.
Like, it was basically like, yeah, a vote or two off, like, could have been a tie or something like that. So it was a close one. Didn't get as many votes. Like, I mean, I think it's just there's certain things that, like, even as a video game player, me, I said, hey, I didn't play Resident Evil 1 even that much. Like, mm-hmm. There's a very select group of people, and I feel like Resident Evil and Tomb Raider were, like, a little more adult games, like, and when they came out, a lot of people who normally would maybe listen to this show were still playing, like, Mario-type games that were more designed for, like, children, you know,
yeah.
So...
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So there wasn't, like, as many votes, but we do appreciate the people who did. Twitter really enjoyed that question as well, so... I hope you guys enjoyed that court case. And I win.
Yeah.
I win. I win. So
you win this one. Someone play a champion song. I'm the person that can edit the show and add in like champion music or like cheery, but like yeah. Oh, woo, Resident Evil. Zombies and shit.
Zombies. Congratulations. So hey, not to be outdone. We have another court case with some, let's say some pet friendly movies. I don't know why I could not think of the word movies.
Moving pictures.
Now, before you say pet friendly, but isn't one of these a goddamn like carnivorous whale? Yes.
How dare you, first of all.
One of them is a dangerous hell beast from the ocean.
They're not called killer whales. They're like killer, it's like orcas. And so ball, like more like baller whales.
Baller whales. Like, yeah, that's what so they mean baller. By killer. They're like, they're just, it's a fucking sick ass whale.
He's killing it. So we've got what versus what?
We've got the movie that is inseparable from fucking Michael Jackson. Every time I think of that movie, I think of the opening theme mm-hmm. song. Ba-da. Mm-hmm. I guess it's the closing music.
It's the closing. So we got Free Willy.
Free Willy versus Homeward Bound. I don't have a cute, cool song for that. It's just a great movie.
It's just someone's crying. Someone immediately just started crying.
Immediately.
Yeah, immediately. So this week, I'll go first, yes, and I will cover Free Willy for you. So Free Willy, I cover. No, okay. I'm gonna also start and say, hey, guess what, everyone? I also loved Homeward Bound a lot, like mm-hmm. so much. Like, if I were you,
oh, and I loved Free Willy too. So let's be clear.
Yeah, but honestly, like, I would probably vote for Homeward Bound if I were a listener. But Free Willy was fucking dope, and like, I definitely remember crying and sobbing in the theater when it was all over with because I was a cool little kid. Guess what? Free Willy released in 1993, and actually, interesting point of note was that it was filmed mostly in Portland and Astoria, Oregon. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, when I went back and watched it, I was like, hey, this looks like the Pacific Northwest, because I used to live there. And I was like, oh, wow, it do be that.
What month did that come out, by the way?
I didn't write that down. I want to say it was July.
I only asked that. If it is July, that makes total sense, because me and like seven or eight friends went to this for my birthday. July 16th. My birthday is July 15th. And so
there it is.
I was like 8 years old and we all went and saw that movie for my birthday.
And it was probably one of those beautiful times in the 90s where people were just like, I'm your parent and you're 7 or 8. Yeah. I'm dropping you off here for 3 hours alone. I'll be back.
Oh, no, fam. They came with.
I love
it. Here's how it went at 8 years old. I apologize, totally interrupting the court case. This is a great memory.
Go for it. This is what this is all about.
So there's a movie. So there used to be. Now this like a huge strip mall that is garbage, and there's like nothing there. Like it's like there's a lot of places in Champaign, Illinois, that have kind of gone to decay. We'll say that like it aren't good anymore and don't have really business. But it used to be there was a movie theater that had maybe like 6 screens or something like that. It was one of the smaller ones.
Okay.
Directly next to it, there was a place called Aladdin's Castle that was an arcade. Ooh. So it had hella video games and stuff. And then directly next to that, there was a place called The Batter's Cage, which was like collectible cards, comic books, all that kind of shit. So there was like, it was like this, like, just take us to one spot and just let us exist there for a few hours. And it was like, that was the ideal birthday party back then, like either mine or friends or whatever. So anyways, just had to share that because that was a memory that clung to that. So,
man, that sounds amazing.
It was pretty dope.
Sounds amazing. I wish we would have had anything cool like that in my hometown growing up.
We had a
4-screen movie theater in Corsicana, Texas.
Hell yeah.
And that was it growing up. It was the super end. Rad. Now the old movie theater is a church. Cool.
I don't know. These hallowed grounds?
We are split into 4 different rooms. It's very hard to conduct service. Back to Free Willy. The whole movie starts off with Willy swimming around, like just busting nuts with his family out in the marina.
I'm a whale.
He's like, I'm a fucking whale. This shit is so tight. And then
that's the other thing about killer whales is they know how fucking dope they are too.
They're not killer. Like, they're these baller whales. This is so tight.
I cannot imagine being another species. This is so fucking dope.
Do you see how big I am? Oh, shit. I just ate a seal. What's up? So some fishermen are like, guess what, idiot? I'm going to capture you. And then they get separated from his folks. And like he's like caught up in these nets. And they're like banging, you know, oars together to spook him out. And then his family sees him behind the net. They're like, well, fuck this. And they just swim away. And he starts making what I'm going to start calling from this point forward the Willy One.
What the fuck?
That was
no memory of that.
The Willy Wine? Come on, man.
The most horrifying sound of all time.
I know. And they, and like my kids were kept coming up to me while I was watching this and they'd be like a little bit like Bobby Boucher, but more like a distressed whale. And so maybe Bobby Boucher was a distressed whale.
I just pictured Free Willy running on 2 legs and tackling somebody.
Perfect. Perfect.
That's fucking, okay, sorry.
No, it's perfect.
This is off the rails. I'm so glad.
Get on my level with these tight ass whales.
I have to imagine that his parents like just looked and saw him getting captured. Like, honestly, like we didn't even want these. We didn't even want kids. So
like it's in this economic times.
Yeah, in this economy.
We can't afford you. So this is working out pretty well for the Mr. Great. And the Mrs. So Willie's all caught. He's gone doing the Willy Wine. And then we cut to this kid. I think his name is Jesse. I wrote it down. I'm pretty sure it's Jesse. I never confirmed. But he is like asking people for change to get home. And then he's like scamming people. And we quickly learn that, yo, this kid's homeless. That's crazy. He's got a bunch of other homeless kid friends. And they're stealing leftover food from restaurants and like running from the cops and like stealing a cake from a caterer's van. And they're like, then he and like three of his homeless kid friends are like, you know, it turns out this was at the, was it the Burnside skate park in Portland, Oregon? So anyone who knows Portland, that particular scene was filmed there. I've been to that skate park before. And they're like eating cake and talking about like, oh man, I miss my mom, but she abandoned me. LOL. And then the cops come. LOL. Can you believe they're saying LOL in 93? Check it. It's true. So the cops come and they like run away. If you remember the scene of like the kid's foot stepping on the cake, running away. And then they run to this like aquarium where Jesse and his friend are like, they get into this area to get away from the cops. And before like any of the lights are on, they just like pull out their spray paint cans and just start spraying shit.
So they're on the run from the cops and are like, I mean, we're not going to pass up an opportunity to fuck some shit up.
No, they're like, we don't even know what this is. It's like they're not even looking at it. They're just like, who fucking cares what it's spraying? Like, they could be spraying an elderly person. It's like, this is perfect. And so they're running, they're tagging shit, and then suddenly a lightning storm starts, and then lightning strikes, and in this dark room that Jesse's in, suddenly, boom, lightning, Willie. And then there's this killer whale on the other side of the glass, and there's lightning, and he's like, ah! And Willie's like, ah! And then it's the best. And
how did these kids get into a large like aquatic theme park type thing, like fun, on the run from police?
Fun fact, locks were not invented until 1994.
I didn't remember that. So thank you for reminding me.
Those literally were the hard days. Locks. Yeah.
Those were the rough
locks.
Days back then.
No locks till 94, baby. side note, by 11 minutes into this movie, twice someone has been called a bonehead. This is very important information.
Bonehead? Okay, well, this will come back in play later on in the movie.
I'm sure. Well, like so Jesse is homeless but has like a social worker, and the social worker calls him a bonehead after Jesse calls one of his other friends a bonehead. And I was just like, 93 was the sweetest year. Can we just talk about that? That's so sweet to call someone a bonehead.
You rascal.
You old rascal flats. So Jesse is trying to get adopted by this foster family. They're like the super cute ass white couple in Astoria. And since he's in need of guidance, they take him in. And after he's been arrested for, you know, tagging this place or this aquarium where Willie is, they're like, you're coming to be with us. And they give him, if you remember the scene, they walk him into his bedroom and they give him like the fucking penthouse suite. It's amazing. It's like wall-to-wall windows, and it has a gorgeous view of the, I think it was technically the Columbia River. Yeah, the Columbia River outside of, I think, the border between Portland and Washington. Like, I looked this up. I got the address to this house, by the way. I went a little off the rails today. They're like, we got you all, you know, all these new polos and shit like this. Like, we're going to try to help you out. And he's like, whatever. I'm not talking. I'm just going to, like, fucking play this sad-ass harmonica. And so he does that. Like, if you remember, his thing is like playing the harmonica. It's like his blanket, his dumper blanket. Sure. So he's sent back to the aquarium to do some time to clean off the graffiti. And he's put on Willie's, cleaning the graffiti off of Willie's viewing bay. And so while he's there, he learns that Willie, the fucking bitch tits whale. My being up 14 hours is starting to show. Oh, yeah. He learns that Willie is a temperamental little bitch and really difficult. And he's like, oh, shit, I'm just like this Will.
I'm a bitch, too. You want to hang out?
I'm a temperamental little bitch kid, too. I don't have a mom. Life's hard. LOL. And then apparently Willie is a scrub just like Jesse and is attracted to a super shitty harmonica playing. And then his trainer, I think her name was Lori Petty. She was Jack Mentor something girl, bomb girl. No, not bomb girl. It was someone screaming it. I hope someone's screaming it. Something girl.
What are you asking? Are you asking the name of an
Lori
actress?
Petty. She was in a movie. I'm just gonna look this up real quick.
Lori Petty.
Just
pulled her up.
What was the movie? Tank girl, not bomb girl. She was Tank Girl. And also, it doesn't matter. She was in Tank Girl. Anyway, so she's the whale's trainer. And then there's a guy named Randolph who's like an Indian and is like, Willie is my heart and soul or whatever. That's not true.
He's a spirit animal.
He's a spirit animal. He's a piece of shit like me, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so the trainer is like, hey, little boy, want to feed a fucking whale to make him love you more since he hates me? And he does. And Jesse and Willie are like bros for life now. Because he's like, you gave me fish. We're both broken people.
Oh, man.
Slash species.
You're an orphan and you have food? Fuck yeah, man.
This is the best. I love
you. You got any weed?
Do you got any sweet, sweet Astoria weed?
Dank kush out there? Come on. Let's light it up.
So Jesse's like, I get this whale. He gets me too. And so they start bonding. And then a night or two later, Jesse runs away from home to go be with Willie. And he plays a harmonica and Randolph comes out looking to see what's going on. And he takes off running and slips in the water beside Willie's tank and then like hits his head and just rolls into the water. He's like, I'm dead. And Willie's like, no,
that was the
end
of the movie.
That was it. Can you believe that's how it ended?
I
don't remember that
at all.
No wonder I cried so
hard.
And
it wasn't even a very cool way to die. He just fucking died. And they just were like, welp. And then he got eaten by a whale.
That's a wrap. That's a wrap on him. Willie pushes his limp ass sad body to the top of the thing. And he's like, wow, Willie saved me. We're bros forever. And so, after shortly thereafter, Jesse begins to realize how fucking depressed this whale is and that he's in captivity in a tank that's like way too small for him. And they show all these close-ups of his sad-ass whale eyes. Oh, it's so sad. But the thing is like, that was probably real. Those were some real sad eyes, I'm sure. They're like, let's just film this. This is realistic.
This is good.
He's a really depressed animal. Mm-hmm. So meanwhile, he and Willie keep the bond going strong and Jesse starts like teaching him tricks and stuff. And so meanwhile, like this mean ass owner of the park played by Michael Ironside, I knew his face, didn't know his name, but I'm just dropping the name in case anyone knew it. He sees that Jesse is able to get Willie to fucking do something for once and pounces on the idea to make his purchase of Willie like finally profitable. And he's like, you two are going to do a show for this shitty amusement park. Willie has done nothing since we got him because he's so sad because we're horrible people. And so, but if you remember the first day of quote unquote the Willie show, kids are like banging and slamming their hands on the tank.
Oh, yeah.
And Willie gets really pissed off and like slams into the windows and kids start running, screaming. And he makes a little hole in one of the bolts and
he jumped into the stands and killed seven kids.
He ate seven children and broke the backs of three adult men with his giant killer whale tail. So tight.
I love the thought that somebody like was listening to this show and was like, I need to know the plot of Free Willy. And like,
you're learning
and they're like,
it all.
These fuckers keep interrupting with fake nonsense. I'm here
it's
for the real
true.
Story.
I've not said one thing that was a lie. Everything is true. Look it up. Watch it yourself.
Read a book.
Remember it all. Get a book. Get the Free Willy book. So the Jesse's all upset, but shortly thereafter, you know, he's all disappointed about how bad the show went. Willy didn't do any tricks, didn't do anything for him. But like as he's out somewhere, he like climbs up something and he can see out in the ocean a bunch of killer whales like swimming around and they're doing the and he's like, is Willie's family? Oh no. And he's like, I gotta help get him back to his family. That's why he's so depressed. So that he gets on this mission to get Willie back out there. And all the same while the owner's assistant like sneaks into the bay to start damaging Willie's tank on purpose to like kill him so that they can cash in on their $1 million insurance policy and finally get some kind of refund on him. What?
I need you to know that, like, this entire time you've been doing the plot, I've been waiting for you to get to that point because I didn't remember that plot point of being like, I'm going to kill Willie to get $1 million insurance policy. Like,
I
that
didn't
is
get
the that is the wildest plot point, but the most realistic plot point imaginable. Somebody would be like, fuck this investment. I'm just going to fucking murder
I'm
this
going
whale.
To, I'm going to kill this 3.5-ton animal to be like, I should get my money back.
Yeah.
I have the receipt from stealing him from the ocean. I can get my money back somehow. So they spend this time trying to jailbreak him to take him back to the bay and let him go. And then they get him to the bay, but there are all these shipping boats and the owner and his assistant, which are bad people, are like trying to wreak havoc. And Willie's been out of the water too long and they're pouring like Ozarka bottles of water on his eyeball. And they're like, you're going to make it, Willie. And this verbatim how it happened in the movie. And then
you're going to make it, Willie.
And then
here's some Dasani.
Here's some Dasani. You're going to be cool. I've got Gatorade to really help you out.
Yeah.
So he gets into the bay and then Jesse like runs on this dike and he's like, Willie, you gotta go, like you gotta jump over. And then he fucking motherfucking Michael Jackson, I will be there. And then like Willie makes that jump, and then Jesse's like, bye dog, I love you.
Can I just say, there are so many other places he could have stood besides the most dangerous spot imaginable. Like, I'm going to stand so he jumps directly over me. So, like, there was a lot of room for error if he just jumped over the dike. But no, I'm going to also stand so he has to clear my ass, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And can I also say, watching the movie in 2020, this movie from 1993, that jump scene still holds up. I didn't look it up, but, like, it looked real.
Sure.
So it in seven, was it 27 years? How many years? That's so many years. 27 that's, years later, it still years. Holds up. I hate it. So that's Free Willy. I remember sobbing in the theaters when it was over, and I have 2 points of trivia that are very interesting to share. One, there was a phone number at the end of the movie for donations to help save the whales. Mm-hmm. That effort helped raise $20 million
Sweet
to save
Jesus.
The whales that were in captivity. Yes.
That's righteous.
And number two, apparently there were 2 animatronic whales that were made for the movie, and they were so realistic that Keiko, the whale who played Willy, got a boner.
Boned it.
So
I knew it. I was going to jokingly say boned it, but you...
Well, I don't... I mean, they said he was aroused, so that doesn't mean he acted on anything, but he was like, oh, shit. You see that half of that whale
over
there?
Right
over
there. You see that?
Mm. Oh. Takes
Honey,
one to know
you
one,
turn
baby.
Around?
What you hike a Dusker and show me that fat ass? That's God, Free Willy.
I was thinking of an alternate ending, like, where they do kill Willy. but then the people are all arrested for insurance fraud. Cause like, here's the thing. I'm pretty sure if a whale escaped, they would still pay out on the insurance policy. Like, I think that still like, qualifies as
like wow, I don't know how a whale got away from you, but neat. Like, we'll still pay the insurance policy. So
you know how this movie really ends? Like, just a massive lawsuit on that fucking kid and his family. Like, just like, everybody, like, he's like, we freed the whale. And they're like, okay, cool. You owe me $1 million. Like, the insurance pays out $1 million. Then they come out after him in court and get $1 million back from him and his family that adopted him. The end.
Unbelievable. That's Free Willy, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
There you go. We did it.
I hope I ruined the movie for you at the end.
Yes. And you know what, everyone? I gave you exactly what happened in the movie. You don't even have to go watch it. That's exactly what happened. Some tight-ass whales. So I want to hear about Homeward Bound now.
Okay. Homeward Bound was a film.
Was it?
About cats and dogs. That's it. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for coming along for the journey. Man, so there was a pretty big discrepancy between the amount of money that this film made versus yours. Your movie made a lot of money. Like, but again, that was like, it was a high budget flick. This was a movie that was literally dubbed voices over just dogs and a cat just doing things.
Just doing
like,
shit.
And that's the thing is this movie was like, they were like, hey, listen, like, we know that people, we've got the technology to start making cartoons and stuff like that. But what if we just didn't? Like, and just
what
like.
What if we didn't?
Like, I have a feeling a lot of the stuff, because, like, I don't think these dogs were, like, super well-trained, especially, like, it feels like Shadow. So there's, okay, I guess I should start.
Yeah.
So there's 3 characters.
Yes.
The 3 main characters. There is Shadow.
Yes. Well, hold on. I don't remember. Okay. Can I take a guess? Because I remember Shadow and Chance. Was the cat's name Missy?
What
was the cat's name Missy?
Sassy.
Sassy shit. Okay, I'm sorry. That's all I wanted to interrupt.
So, and here's the thing is like very, they got really good voice actors for these.
Okay.
So Michael J. Fox did the voice for Chance and was basically the narrator for the film. Sally fucking Field did Sassy.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. And then the voice for Shadow was one of the lesser known. But had a very long and lengthy career, which I'm going to probably butcher this pronunciation, but Don Ameche, A-M-E-C-H-E. He was a much older actor, obviously, at the time. And yeah, so he played Shadow. I will say he was so good as Shadow. Like his, like it was a very, he was the most, the voice and the character and acting and everything, they stuck very true to like, hey, this is actually how dogs would think of people and stuff like that and their relationship with them. Yeah. And kind of the way that like they wouldn't understand what the humans were saying, except for like words that like a dog would understand, like stay, you know, sit, those kind of things. Like they would understand those, or home, or something like that. Different words that like a dog would understand, but they wouldn't understand like a lot of the stuff. But it's very clear to me when I was watching this that like a lot of the stuff that they did, they probably just were like, well, that's what the dog did, so I guess we have to make that into part of the scene. Like, because I don't feel like they could just like keep doing takes with these fucking dogs. Like, it feels like Shadow, the dog that played Shadow, the actual dog, was a pretty well-trained dog. But Chance, the dog that played Chance, was not a very well-trained dog. Like, and I feel like they're just like, let's just get a shitty dog that just doesn't behave well.
Fun fact, dog training was not officially invented until 1994.
Wow, there's just a lot of 94 was a real world beater with dogs and fucking locks.
Yeah, just needs you to know.
So as far as the dog, so there's an immature and disobedient American bulldog, that was Chance. Then Donna Mesh was a wise golden retriever, and a smart mouth Himalayan cat was Sassy. So basically, the movie starts out and there's it's Chance kind of doing a dub over and explaining his whole background of like, hey, you know, I went to the pound. It was the fucking worst. It was fucking jail. And then all of a sudden these guys came and rescued me and took me out. And it's Jamie is like the youngest kid in the family. And that's who his owner is. Basically, he considers that to be the person that is his owner. But he doesn't have like a real strong tie to him. He's kind of like, yeah, he seems cool. You know, he seems fine. But he's got like a natural distrust for humans in general. We kind of meet the different characters in different ways. So at the beginning, it's, you know, Shadow is at this wedding because he's so well behaved and he's like next to Peter, who is his boy that he protects and loves. And like he considers like his absolute fucking God-given task in life to protect this fucking boy.
Ropes for life.
And so Shadow, is basically like this super prissy, preppy, like spoiled cat that like is like, I can get whatever I want, you dogs are fucking idiots. And I mean, so basically Sassy was a cat basically, so
yeah,
she played a cat. So start out, they're at the house of the family that they live in, and they are having a wedding. Hooray. It's the wedding of the mom and the husband, and I guess I don't know the exact layout of like whose kids were whose, because they're just getting married just now, and they've got like one kid who's clearly like a teenager, the girl is maybe like a tween, and then the or maybe like 9 or 10 or something like that, and then the youngest kid is probably like 5. And they're having this wedding just in their backyard, and it's like there's probably like, I don't know, like 30 people there or something like that, which I mean, it's fine. I mean, they were kind of out in the boonies.
That second marriage, that second wedding.
Yeah. Never, they're like, you know what? We're good. We don't need a big one. So you just kind of get a layout. Of course, Chance runs out and fucks everything up just repeatedly. Just like, I'm going to fuck up all this food and just fuck everything up. It is funny because like they get kind of lessons taught from each other. Like Sassy's like, you got to act like you don't want it. And then they give you food. And I remember he's like, all right, I'm going to do that. And then he just like, they show him, he's like, I got to just act like you don't want it. And then he walks up to this cake and just starts eating a shitload of cake. And everybody turns and is like, oh, fuck. He's like, oh, I couldn't possibly. I mean, if you guys want this, that's fine. I just, you know, I thought I'd take some off your plate. Like, but anyways.
Don't they edit in a burp in that scene?
Yes, they edit in a dog burp.
So good.
So then the setup then is that they're kind of like, you know, Peter and the kids are sad because Bob, the dad, has to relocate to San Francisco. They're moving there, and then the pets are going to be left at a ranch with Kate, who is a really good friend of their family. She owns this big farm, and they're like, oh, it's going to be great. They've got, you know, all kinds of, you know, chickens and pigs and all that kind of stuff. They'll love it out there. And of course, they don't understand. The pets don't understand. And especially Shadow is just like fucking devastated by this. And he just kind of like they get taken out to this farm, and he's just sitting there on the porch, just literally sitting there waiting for Peter to get back.
Wait. So they're actually like, we're rehoming the pets because we're moving to San Francisco.
We're moving to San Francisco, but like it's only temporary, and they're supposed to come back and visit like every couple weeks or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So obviously, like Shadow refuses to believe that he'd abandon him. Sassy is like, this is fucking bogus. Sassy's kind of like on the fence. She's like kind of on Chance's side, where Chance is like, they fucking left us. And Chance, of course, is just like, this is just like fucking people. They just, you know, they use you and they spit you out. And then the lady who's supposed to be watching them is like, hey, I've got to take the horses on a drive or whatever. And so she like leaves this note for this guy to like come like watch after the pets. And so she like leaves, and she's like, fuck, now everybody's leaving. And so they're like, we got to get out of here. They're going to leave us here to die. And so they just jump the fence, and they like are like, we're going home. So they just fucking head out into the mountains. So that's kind of like what the majority of the film is them going through this journey, going through the forest and all that stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, each character kind of showing their different characteristics and everything. Chance in general just fucking up repeatedly. It's just like overly ambitious about everything. Can't seem to catch food. They're all like starving out there in the wild. Sassy's a baller at catching fish. But then one scene, they've got to like cross this river, and Sassy's like, you got to be fucking kidding me. I'm not crossing a goddamn river. They cross the river at a like real mild place, and Sassy's like, fuck that. I'm going to go find a place where there's stones to go over. Mm-hmm. So she does. And then she hops onto this log that's kind of like, you know, halfway in the water and halfway on the land. And then the log breaks, and she goes bye-bye down the rapids and down a fucking waterfall. So things aren't great for Sassy.
Not going so hot for the cat.
Not great. So Shadow and Chance are, like, looking for her, and they can't find her. And they're like, well, Sassy's fucking dead. So they continue on their journey. And then, like, later on, you find, like, the next morning or whatever. Jesus, it's a long time. This random guy who's living out in the wild and is like, oh, I found an eagle. Oh, what a great picture. I'm so glad to see another eagle. And then he's like, oh, fuck, a cat. And he just brings the cat inside and takes her home, feeds her, cleans her up and everything like that. And so that's going on in the background. Meanwhile, the real saga is Chance and Shadow encounter a fucking mountain lion.
Oh, that's right. The mountain lion.
Yeah. And they're like running away from the mountain lion, and they're terrified. And then like, so, which the insane thing is, this is that they like, from what I can tell, is like this mountain lion lost them. Like they made it away from this mountain lion, and then it's gone. So they're like, we have to think up a plan to fucking just destroy this mountain lion rather than just like keeping running away. Like they couldn't, like there was a cliff or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shadow sees this rock that's kind of looks like a seesaw. And Shadow's like, hey, seesaw, because this was a joke earlier on in the movie where he had jumped on one end of seesaw that Sassy was sitting on the other side and fucking catapulted her in the air. Now, bearing in mind, Sassy is a very tiny domesticated cat,
mm-hmm.
and seesaws are designed for that, but they were like, this giant rock will work. So anyway, so they spring a trap, Shadow acts as bait, gets the cat to step directly on one side of this big rock. Chance jumps off and fucking catapults this cat that has to weigh so much more than a fucking bulldog. But anyways, we're not going to talk about physics in a fun kids movie.
Fun fact, physics weren't invented
until 1994. Later on in 94. So many thanks. God, okay.
Such a big year. Good.
Anyways, so they end up meeting up. They like are celebrating their victory. Sassy hears the dogs barking and is like, fuck you, person that saved my life. And she just bolts and meets up with them. And they're like, oh, my God, I'm so happy to see you. Anyways, there's...
Can I pause and ask you a question, please, real quick? The mountain lion scene. When they show it catapulting, don't they show it like catapulting through the air?
Yeah.
Did any of that look real?
It's one of those things where it's kind of like they show the mountain lion slightly in the air from like they like forced perspective where they kind of like put it at a certain angle so it looks like it's going really high. And then all of a sudden they show like them going over the cliff and falling into a river or whatever down below.
Oh my gosh.
So it didn't look particularly real, no.
Oh, okay.
I don't think they were like, fuck this mountain lion.
like Jimmy on the count of three, we're going to catapult this son of a bitch straight over the cliff, okay? Yeah, we did it all for Homeward Bound. We did
worth
it.
Worth it.
Worth it.
If we don't get it in one shot, we're going to have to do it again.
We went through 16 mountain lions in the filming.
Every
of
one
movie.
Of them died. Not a single one made it. We had to get a 17th mountain lion just to be swimming in the water at the end so we could be like, let's see it.
We're on America's Most Wanted now. For animal cruelty.
Single-handedly killed all the mountain lions.
Woof.
So there's a part where Chance is checking out this porcupine. You know how that ends.
Oh, yes, yes.
He gets fucking batted in the face with some fucking spines. One super heartwarming moment is they're like, you know, they're having a bad time in the forest, and they hear like a little girl crying. So Shadow, super adorable, goes up to them and is like, oh, you're going to be okay, little girl. And she's like, I love you, doggy. And then they like keep her warm overnight. And then the next day they hear like a search party out, and Shadow runs and like gets the attention of the search party, gets them to come find the girl. And they're like, oh my God, you guys are fucking righteous. Oh yeah. By the way, we also saw posters of you motherfuckers. Like, so we know your family's looking for them. But of course the dogs and the cats don't understand that they're like, hey, we're bringing you into this place for the night because your family's coming to get you in the morning. So Chance is like, I fucking knew it. They're going to fucking put us in the pound. I told you, motherfuckers. And so then the rest of them are like, yep, you're right. I can't believe Chance has been right this whole time. So they break out of the place where they got stored. Of course, the family shows up and they're gone. And they're like, fuck, how did you fucking lose our pets? Anyways, they continue on their voyage and are actually shockingly very close to home. They get over this last mountain and they're like, holy shit, home is ahead. And they get to this train yard and they're like, let's just get past these fucking trains. We can make it home by night. And then probably the saddest thing of all time in human history was Shadow is walking across like a railroad tie, and suddenly it falls out from under him and he falls into this big muddy pit at the bottom. Aww. And he's not moving. And they keep being like, Shadow. And then, anyways, you know how it ends.
We do.
Shadow is down there and you're like, fuck, Shadow's not going to make it. He tries a bunch of times to get up, but he can't. And then like Chance even gets in there with him and is like, we're going to fucking get out of this. And then they show the next day, all the families back at home at their old home. They're like, you know what? Let's just go home. You know, we've had a rough time and we were already in the neighborhood. So they're all back at home playing around. And suddenly, they're out in the backyard and they hear like a bark, and the kid is like, that sounds like Chance. They're like, no, honey, it's not. They're gone. You know, like they, and then they hear it again. They're like, wait, no, that does sound like Chance. And then Chance runs over the hill and they're, you know, celebrating. They're like, oh my God, he made it back. That's so great. And then while they're hugging him, then all of a sudden, you know, Sassy comes over and meows, and the sister is like, oh my God, Sassy, yay.
That's right, yeah.
And so you're like, oh great. And then they show the hill again and there's nobody coming.
Oh.
And then Peter kind of sits there like looking expectantly, and then he just looks back at his family and he's just like, he was too old.
No.
He was just too old.
So sad.
And they do some really good, because the thing is, it's this dramatic irony, not dramatic irony, but it's actually the opposite of dramatic irony, because nobody knows this is going to happen, because the audience also thinks, hey, Shadow's dead, like, because he was not getting out of that fucking pit.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, all of a sudden, like, when everybody's kind of turning to, like, go, like, then all of a sudden, you see Shadow come over the hill and come running for Peter, and it's, like, the most heartwarming thing of all time. And I literally texted Lisa like during the movie, and I was like, great, well now I'm crying at this fucking movie again.
I don't think there's some movies that like you will just always cry at, like Land Before Time.
Yeah, it's Bambi. More like, it's one of those things you kind of get like choked up at or whatever, like it's just like you kind of like inhale your breath and you're like, I'm not gonna cry. But yeah, so it was super sweet, and it's the end. They reunite, and the big thing is like Chance kind of like, you know, Suddenly now he loves Jamie, his kid, and everything like that. They're all like a family again, and they value each other as pets more and respect each other and have learned a important lesson. And that's the end of the movie. I did want to mention the fun fact. This is just something I've known forever, and I mentioned it to Lisa. I'm like, I need to confirm this before I say this on the show, is that Don Ameche, who is the actor who played Shadow, died on December 6, 1993.
Oh, man.
The movie... oh, I'm sorry. I guess it was... So the movie was released before he died, but basically, like, 10 months after the movie was released, the actor passed away. I just always... I just one of those things where, for some reason, somebody had said that, like, one time, and it's just always stuck with me as, like, that makes sense. Shadow was, like, super old, and it was just fitting that, like... That was his last act, was as this character, and then he passed away like less than a year later, after the film came out. So,
jeez.
But I'm seeing these pictures of him; they are all like super old timey. He's the
coolest shit. I'm looking at him too. Yeah.
Yeah, ragtimey old school photos. He's born in 1908. So, anyways,
would you like to be a little sadder? Would the pain of Homeward Bound like to keep going for you?
Sure.
All of those animals are dead.
Lisa, here's the thing. Everybody in their heart knew that to be true, but we weren't thinking about it until you had to fucking say that. Because of course they're dead. Of course they're dead.
But sometimes it's really hard to face the facts and be like, this movie's 27 years old. That cat, that dog, the other dog, dead. Hey, even Keiko the Whale is dead.
Yeah.
So none of our animals
Willy,
are...
Free Willy got free, but he died shortly afterwards.
Yeah.
It was actually like puppy. He couldn't fend for himself anymore after being fucking trapped in captivity for so long.
That's true. Actually, I think that was true. I think you're exactly right. Like, he was just like, I don't fucking got this. LOL. He like died of pneumonia or something in Norway. I read something. I read about it. It's like he had like pneumonia.
Oh, no.
Whale pneumonia.
Whale pneumonia. I mean,
so tight and boning so many animatronic whales in Norway. Jesus. He's out. Out skis.
Well... Sorry, killer whale. Sorry, dope whales. You weren't cool enough to
Weren't cool enough.
All right.
Man, well, we that's had quite our a court show tonight. Case.
Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey. And anyways, that's going to, I think, do it for episode 29. So, Lisa, you want to take us out?
Yes. You know that you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at 90s Court, Instagram at 90s.court. We are on Patreon at 90s Court. If you would like to support the show, you can have access to our special monthly podcast called Y2 Court. And thank you to all of our patrons for being patient, as this weekend was just a little wild. Plans changed on the fly. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to get a Y2 Court episode this week to our lovely, lovely patrons. And so we would love it if you could... rate and review the show, thumbs up, like, heart, whatever you can do on Facebook, Instagram, iTunes, Podchaser, Stitcher, whatever you got, give us the hearts. We would love you for that.
Feed us. We're so hungry for your love.
We need, did you know that I'm on a new diet and the diet is only compliments?
It's just 100% on your love.
I'm dropping so much weight because I'm not getting complimented.
Yeah, actually, while we're at it, since we're near the end of this, I'm going to read a couple.
yes, I would love that.
Reviews we got here. This podcast is all that in a bag of chips.
Ooh.
I love everything about this podcast dedicated to the best decade ever. I just discovered it last night and I'm working my way up through all the episodes to catch up. I'm smiling, laughing, and reminiscing about all the things that made the 90s awesome. Thank you, Emily someone.
Emily
Re 10. Nice. Let's see. This podcast is a true gift for 90s kids like myself. The passion they have for nostalgia is so fun and always gets me reminiscing about my own childhood. I love the structure of the show, pitting two similar 90s related subjects against each other. So smart. That is from Less Adventurous. So we've got a ton of these, and we could rattle off some more. We've got, quite a few, but we always would love more. So if you guys do leave one, from now on, we'll make sure and read reviews on the show if you bring us a new hot review in those next coming weeks. So, anyways, did you have any closing remarks before we depart?
I do have one, and I just need you. I just need you to.
God damn it! Okay.
That's all I got.
And just everybody, hey, thanks again for tuning in for 90s Court. Hopefully, we brought a little bit of joy to your life. And I do want to just make one more parting remark before we depart, because I forgot again.
There it is.
See you next week.
Night, night, dudes.
Bye.
Bye.